News, I'm Tommy McNeil. The United States is deploying a carrier strike group and a bomber task force to the Middle East. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton says that the move is to send a clear message to Iran that any attack on U.S. interests or its allies will be met with unrelenting force. Bolton says the United States is not seeking war with the Iranian regime, but is fully prepared to respond to any attack, whether by proxy, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, or regular Iranian forces. A Russian plane made a fiery landing in Moscow Sunday. Russian officials say at least 40 people were killed. Video from the scene shows passengers using emergency slides to evacuate the burning plane. VOA's Igor Sekhaninka in Moscow says that an investigation is underway.
Russia's very powerful investigative committee decided to take on this issue, and they opened a criminal probe into this incident. I'm sure there'll be very, very significant and very serious investigation into what has happened.
The Aeroflot plane had 78 people on board. Catholics in Sri Lanka celebrated Sunday Mass at their homes for another week Sunday. This was prompted by security concerns following attacks last month that killed more than 250 people. As he did last week, the Cardinal Malcolm Ranjith conducted a private memorial mass that was broadcast on television. Also on Sunday, the Sri Lankan government imposed a curfew on Negombo and reimposed the ban on social media after violence erupted in the seaside town. A church in Negombo was the site of one of the bombings 2 weeks ago during an Easter service there. Again, Catholics in Sri Lanka celebrating Sunday Mass at their homes another week. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. A Taliban suicide bomber detonated his explosives-laden vehicle at a police headquarters in northern Afghanistan Sunday. A six-hour gun battle between gunmen and security forces followed that attack. The attack killed at least 13 security personnel and injured more than 55 others. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ordered the army to keep up massive strikes against Hamas targets in Gaza and the deadliest fighting along the border in 5 years. Israel killed a Hamas commander in a targeted strike, the first such killing since the 2014 Gaza War. Reuters' David Doyle reports.
The death toll rose on both sides of the Israel-Gaza border on Sunday. Among the dead, top Hamas commander Hamid Ahmed al-Qudri. Israel's military says more than 600 projectiles have been fired at southern Israel since Friday, and that it's attacked 260 targets belonging to Gaza militant groups, the ruling Hamas and Islamic Jihad. In Gaza, at least 8 civilians have been killed since Friday. On Sunday, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered the Israeli military to continue with, quote, massive strikes, and said forces around the Gaza Strip would be stepped up.
That's Reuters' David Doyle reporting. The standoff between the White House and Congress over Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russia's tampering with the U.S. election continues. AP's Ben Thomas.
A tentative date has been set of May 15th, and we hope the Special Counsel will appear. We think the American people have a right to hear directly from him.
But on Fox News Sunday, Congressman David Cicilline conceded the Judiciary Committee has not confirmed Robert Mueller's appearance.
Until the date comes, we never have an absolute guarantee. The White House has so far indicated they would not interfere with Mr. Mueller's attempts to testify. We hope that won't change.
But President Trump doesn't sound happy about it, tweeting Sunday, Bob Mueller should not testify. No redos for Dems. The president said last week he would leave the decision to his attorney general. Ben Thomas, Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is only ruling for the moment, despite last week's failed effort by opposition leader Juan Guaido to overthrow the regime. Meanwhile, Democratic Senator Dick Durbin is on CBS's Face the Nation says Russia has contributed to the upheaval in Venezuela by sending in soldiers in unmarked Green Army uniforms to support President Maduro.
They are destabilizing the situation there. They're there to support Maduro. They don't want to see the change that the American people want to see, and that's to have a free election in that country and a choice of someone democratically.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says he hopes President Trump is not considering military options. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, May 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Some parties talk alliances as campaigning for Wednesday's South Africa election goes into high gear.
It will only become a reality on national level if the ANC goes below 50%, which I think is unlikely. I mean, most of the polls predict that it will get between 54 and 59%.
Amanda House is chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Stellenbosch. Rwanda buries tens of thousands of genocide victims. South Sudan parties want 6 more months to form a unity government. And tension builds ahead of a June 7th anti-government protest in Liberia.
The government is not organizing any counter-protest on June 7 or June 8 or any of the days thereabouts. Additionally, the leadership of the Congress for Democratic Change and the Coalition for Democratic Change already issued a statement that there will be no counter-protest.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister and will tell you how border cities in West Africa integrate, build infrastructure and grow. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Campaigning among South Africa's 3 leading political parties went into high gear over the weekend ahead of Wednesday's general election. Julius Malema of the Economic Freedom Fighters Party addressed his supporters Sunday about land reform and jobs. President Cyril Ramaphosa of the dominant African National Congress ANC party promised to revive the country's weakening economy and to punish members guilty of corruption. Musi Maimane of the Democratic Alliance promised to form alliances with smaller parties to break the dominance of the ruling ANC. Professor Amanda House is chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Stellenbosch.
It will only become a reality on national level if the ANC goes below 50%, which I think is unlikely. I mean, most of the polls predict that it will get between 54 and 59%. But if it goes below 50%, then clearly we need a coalition government. And I think the DA is saying then that there needs to be an alliance, for example, of the DA with the smaller parties. And here I think the concern is that the DA will go into coalition with the parties to the right, which is the Freedom Front, it's an Afrikaner party, and the ACDP, which is a Christian party. Because the DA ran their campaign on keeping the ANC and the EFF out. So it would be really strange then if they go into an alliance with the Economic Freedom Fighters.
Professor, what do you make of the African National Congress and President Cyril Ramaphosa speaking Sunday, promising that the African National Congress will punish members who are guilty of stealing public money? As you know, the ANC, its past immediate presidents have even been associated with corrupt acts. So how serious is this promise that President Ramaphosa is making?
He is very serious because we can also already see it in the fact that he appointed the Zondo Commission that is looking into corruption and the Makora inquiry also into corruption. And I mean, the information that's coming out through the Zondo Commission is absolutely mind-boggling. So there is no basically limitations on what Ramaphosa is allowing to become public knowledge. But I think the problem is that if you look at the ANC election list, at the moment, it's very even between those who support Ramaphosa and those who support Jacob Zuma. And it will depend then who gets into cabinet after the election, assuming that Cyril Ramaphosa is the president, who he puts in his cabinet, and how many of the Zuma faction will be members of parliament. Because they can actually tie his hands if it's very even. And that will determine to what extent he has leeway to deal with corruption. But in terms of his attitude towards corruption and his commitment to root out corruption, it is quite serious.
Professor, do you get the feeling that both the ANC and the Democratic Alliance are trying to woo Julius Malema and his economic freedom fighters? Because Julius Malema made a comment on Sunday claiming that President Cyril Ramaphosa had offered him and his deputy cabinet positions.
Well, he also said on Sunday that, you know, that's not true. Julius Malema said that. But these rumors come and go. And I think this is also the reason why this happened is because Malema came out of the ANC. He was kicked out of the ANC Youth League. And then he started the Economic Freedom Fighters. So I think he himself starts the rumors. But it's very unlikely that Ramaphosa will give him a cabinet position unless it is that there's some agreement or some compromises made between the EFF and the ANC in which the members of the EFF can be useful for the ANC.
Professor Amanda House is chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Stellenbosch. She was speaking with me from Stellenbosch, Western Cape Province of South Africa. A mass funeral for over 83,000 victims of the 1994 genocide against Rwanda's Tutsi ethnic minority was held over the weekend at Nyanza Memorial in Kigali. The remains of the victims were recovered over a period spanning 1 year from scores of mass graves and underneath houses in the capital. As Eugene Wimana reports from Kigali, authorities say the search will continue until all victims get a decent burial.
The remains of over 83,000 were discovered in densely populated hoods on the outskirts of the city of Kigali. Most of the victims are thought to have been killed at notorious roadblocks along the Kigali Eastern Province road manned by Interahamwe militia. There are some survivors who have been following discovering activities, looking for their beloved ones. Now they say their hearts are relieved. She says she started in April 2018 in Rusororo. I have found so far my two brothers, but I have not found yet the remains of my other relatives. She says, for my brothers, I even saw their shorts. We feel relieved when at least we bury decently our relatives. That's all we can give to them. As explained by Naftali Hishakie, the Secretary General of IWUKA, the umbrella organization of genocide survivors, the search of remains is ongoing in different corners of the country. But he says without the help of perpetrators, it is not easy. He says they continue the search. They will keep on looking for information of where victims might have been dumped. But he says it is not easy because they search for a known number in a known place. There are a lot of tricks that people use to hide information from us, he says, but we keep on burying decently the victims as we get the information. Some of the remains were retrieved from within foundations of houses constructed after the genocide. IWUKA says that in some cases, successive homeowners sold the properties on learning about the remains underneath but did not pass on the information to authorities. The Nyanza Memorial Center, where the recovered victims have been interred and honored, is already home to over 11,000 genocide victims. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
South Sudan parties meeting in Addis Ababa last week agreed to extend the pre-transitional period for up to 6 months, as called for by Riek Machar's SPLMIO rebel group. Opposition groups want the security arrangements finished before a new government is formed. Winnie Sirino reports from Juba.
The parties now have until November 12th to form a unity government, and during that time, the parties are expected to complete security arrangements and settle on the number of states and their boundaries. No additional extensions will be granted. James Cook, a senior research fellow and political analyst at the Juba-based Center for Strategic Policy Studies, applauds the parties for extending the pre-transitional period so they can accomplish what needs to be done before forming the new government. Cook says the politicians should back off for now and eventually endorse whatever technocrats come up with on states and boundaries and security arrangements.
What remains now is for most of those politicians to take their hand off from the technical work. so that the real technocrats can do the work in time without politicization of a lot of this, especially in the security sector.
The peace deal stipulated the government of national unity should be formed once the activities in the pre-transitional period are executed, but George Kagar, president of the African National Congress, says it did not spell out what should happen in the event if those activities fail to be carried out on time.
There are no provisions in the agreement which can allow the government to be formed when things in the pre-interim are not complete.
Joseph Okell Abango, chairperson of United Sudan African Party, or USAP, says the extension should have been deducted from the 3 years of the transitional period.
We are for extension, but if you extend, you will take this number of months, according to my view, they will be taken away from the 3 years. You cannot extra 6 months or 3 months.
Kongar is urging IGAD to continue to consult widely with political actors in South Sudan to keep the peace process moving forward. Sources say President Salva Kiir met today with First Vice President Taban Dengai and Vice President James Waniga to discuss the matter. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Today's Monday, May 6, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Daybreak Africa time 16 minutes past the hour amid rising tension in Liberia as the country prepares for a nationwide anti-government protest on June 7th. The Liberian government says it has no plans to stage a counter-protest. This comes after the Deputy Minister for Press and Public Relations, Eugene Fagon, posted on social media that he will march alongside what he calls the Assembly of Country People to show appreciation to President George Weah and the great job he says Weah has done in the year and a half that he has been in power. The June 7th protests is about what organizers call the country's worsening economic situation and corruption under President Weah. Information Minister Eugene Nambwe says the government has constitutional responsibility to protect both protesters and those who may not want to protest.
The government has said over and over again that we will not prevent any Liberian citizen or group of citizens from exercising their democratic right to freely assemble as guaranteed under the Constitution of Liberia. Now, the Minister of Justice did receive a letter from a group, the Council of Patriots. His response to that group was very simple, very clear, also within the ambit of our statutory laws, wherein when you seek a permit from the Ministry of Justice, naturally, the government will want to know whether you are a legal entity. But aside from that, I think what these people are trying to cover up is that even in his response to these people who wrote the letter, the Minister of Justice did say that you still have a right to rally, to protest as individuals or as a group. But if you write me a letter and you say you are a group that is either incorporated under the laws of Liberia or you are an unincorporated association, then you have to meet the requirements of the law. So all in all, the government is not preventing any Liberian from exercising their rights to assemble. You know, we are also utilizing the relevant laws that put upon the government the responsibility to ensure that the rights of those who don't want to protest are also protected.
The Deputy Minister of Information, Mr. Fagon, is saying that he's going to march on June 7th with a group called the Assembly of Country People. Are you aware of that? And what exactly does he mean by country people?
The position of the government of Liberia is very clear. The government is not organizing any counter-protest on June 7th or June 8th or any of the days thereabout. Additionally, the leadership of the Congress for Democratic Change and the Coalition for Democratic Change already issued a statement that there will be no counter-protest. So we are not aware of some of the social media back and forth, and we as a government cannot be responding to people's social media posts.
But Mr. Fagon is a government minister.
But his position on social media cannot be interpreted as the position of the government of Liberia.
Last year, President Weah announced that undergraduate public university students were going to get free tuition. Now, the development here is that some students have called us to say that the government has increased fees without first making available the free tuition.
That is not true. In fact, currently registration is ongoing at the University of Liberia. nobody pays tuition. The tuition fee mandate and process that was announced by the president is ongoing. And there has also been no increase in all of the other smaller fees that have been at the university. So that it's just a blanket lie. You know, I'm becoming worried, you know, when people call reputable entities like the BBC, the VOA, and try to ensnare you into their propaganda, it is you who have now to ask them, what is the evidence? It is not easy for the, in fact, it is not possible for the administration of the University of Liberia to impose any new fee without approval by the Board of Trustees. That has not happened.
Maybe you can clarify for us, is the government trying to reduce the salary of professors?
Also, that's not the case. Government is not reducing anybody's salaries. This government has decided to harmonize the pay structure. We who are at the top echelon of the government, the ministers, the directors, the deputy ministers, are the ones who will take a pay cut, not the ordinary civil servants.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. How border cities in West Africa integrate, build infrastructure, grow, are more are the subjects of the West Africa Papers, an in-depth series of studies by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD. The lead author of the report, Oliver Werther, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the findings.
Our study found that wait times at borders make cities far less accessible. For example, between Mali, Burkina Faso, and Cote d'Ivoire, the population that could be reached decreases by 25% because of wait times at borders. So this is very significant. And another interesting finding is that checkpoints established by the police, gendarmerie, or customs authorities also reduce the potential markets of border cities. So for some cities along the Gulf of Guinea, for example, where the largest road corridor of the region is located, checkpoints reduce accessibility by more than half. And we believe that these practices create substantial delays, but also additional costs for traders, transporters. They increase the high price in the region, which affects the final price paid at the market by consumers.
The OECD looked at the mapping of health infrastructure, and that showed that border towns have a surplus of medical centers and a deficit of hospitals and maternity wards relative to the urban populations. What are the reasons for this?
Africa has made great progress on health over the last 15 years. For mortality rates, for example, have decreased rapidly, also for children. And as a consequence, the average life expectancy has increased from 50 to 60 years in the last 15 years. But our study conducted in West Africa shows that health infrastructure is very unequally distributed across the region. So states tend to concentrate most of their top-tier facilities in capital cities. And as a result, there are very few health cities in border regions. And the fact that border regions are less equipped than other regions, I think, is a matter of concern, not just for national cohesion, but also for regional integration.
This study looked at a lot of different cities in a lot of different countries. What are some of the border cities that were more integrated than others?
So some of the most integrated cities are located on the Gulf of Guinea between Ghana and Nigeria, because this is where the population densities are the highest. This is where the road infrastructure is the most developed. And in this region, people can relatively easily move from one side of the border to the other to do business or to meet their families. And there's also a large number of big cities.
That was Oliver Werther, lead author of the OECD's West Africa Papers. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the United States. A Gabonese court on Friday rejected a request for an independent medical exam to determine whether President Ali Bongo is fit to rule after suffering a stroke last year. Paul Marie Gonju is the deputy executive secretary of the main opposition National Union Party. He says it's time for both the government and the opposition to begin to focus on solving the problems impacting the country.
It's hard to say because a group of people, I mean some friends, who made this move to ask the Justice Court to decide if there could be a medical committee just to say if Mr. Bongo could be able to run the country or not. It could have been done through Constitutional Court also, but they chose to go to the Judicial Court, and the tribunal was not competent to state on this matter, which is true, because that request was, concerned the head of state, and the Judicial Court is hardly competent to state about this. Now, I'm not surprised that they decide to not be competent. I'm not surprised.
The ruling said that only the Constitutional Court can call for vacancy of power. So do you think it's likely that those who ask the judge or the court system will go to the Constitutional Court to ask for vacancy?
They tried first, but the Constitutional Court didn't want to receive their request. That is something I can understand, because the Constitutional Court is... those people are nominated by the head of state, by the running power.
Paul Marie Gonjou is the Deputy Executive Secretary of the main opposition National Union Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Libreville. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the CAF Champions League, where the finalists for the Elite Africa Club competition have emerged. Esperance of Tunisia and Wydad Casablanca of Morocco qualified for the CAF Champions League final on Saturday, setting up a third consecutive title decider between North African clubs. Trophy holders Esperance drew 0-0 away to TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo in a semi-final second leg to advance 1-0 on aggregate. In the other semi-final, Wydad Casablanca of Morocco proved equally strong defensively to force a 0-0 stalemate away to Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa and progress 2-1 overall. It will be the second Champions League final between Esperance and Wydad, with the Tunisians winning 1-0 on aggregate in 2011. DG Ogembo and Opeyemi Akiode speaks on the dominance of North African clubs in the competition.
For the third consecutive year, we'll be seeing the all North African finals, and we thought TP Mazembe as well as Mamelodi Sundowns could break that jinx, but it was not meant to be. It was a close context, no doubt about that. Those two club sides seem to be the only one outside this region to have been able to ruffle shoulders with the best.
This final will be the repeat of the 2011 finals where Wydad and Esperance played. Esperance actually pipped them to that one by 1-0. Who rules African football? It's definitely the North Africans. If you look at it, in the last three Champions League finals that we've had, people, teams from this same region playing each other in the final. If it's not Esperance of Tunisia, it's Al Ahly. If it's not Al Ahly, it is Wydad.
In the CAF Confederations Cup, Egypt's SC Zamalek will meet RS Bakane of Morocco in the final after the duo progressed from Sunday's semi-final second legs. The first leg will be contested for on May 19th in Morocco before the return match in Egypt a week later. In athletics news, Caster Semenya, double Olympic champions and three-time world champions, showcased her class in the women's 800 meters race at the opening leg of the IAAF Diamond League in Doha on Friday evening. Caster Semenya stormed clear and crossed the finish line in 1 minute 54.98 seconds. She finished 3 seconds ahead of Burundian Francine Niasoba, who finished second, and American Ajay Wilson, who came in third.
It's always hard to run, a first race. But if you run in the such weather conditions, and then you feel like you can move, you just keep moving. I enjoy running a little bit faster races. 154, that's a crazy pace. It's not suicidal, but at the end of the day, it's all about inspiring, the world, showing the world that, it's possible if you believe. So, yeah.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, May 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butty, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.